I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Monday, everybody. It's Dukes and Bell on a Falcon Monday. Disappointing yesterday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but not disappointing for the Dogs. And we've been talking a lot about it as this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings perimeter location. Come on out. They've got drink specials going on. As a matter of fact, Mike, they have your pick six. And I was talking about this earlier because somebody was asking about the food here. Number one, your onion rings. Oh. They're great. Jersey Mike's having some wings over there. They look delicious. And the bottom line is, if you come out today, they've got your food covered. We've got the doubleheader that's going to be on Monday Night Football. But again, it's two entrees, two sides, two drinks for only $19.99, and happy hour from 3 to 6 o'clock.
Now, that's good value. The good people here at Buffalo Wild Wings fighting inflation. Americans need it, Carl, and Buffalo Wild Wings is delivering. Thank you.
Hey, man, so come on out and join us. We're going to talk more about the Falcons along the way, but right now we got to talk some dogs. Well, Connor Riley, I don't think it was a shock to people who knew the potential of this team, but I think America did not expect to see the dominance of what happened in Austin on Saturday night. What are your interpretations of what went down? Because up front, this is what I was getting from people back in Texas. They are getting destroyed up front, and Georgia owned the offensive and defensive fronts.
That's a Texas defensive line that has multiple guys that are going to play in the NFL sooner rather than later. And it just was a total mismatch. Throughout that entire game, Texas finished the game with 29 rushing yards. They had 38 yards of offense at halftime, 2 of 15 on third down. This Georgia team has played a lot of great defensive games in its past. I think that this is absolutely on the short list where the two drives that they score on, one started at the Georgia 9, and the other started at the Texas 45-yard line. They did nothing of consequence in the first half. I thought the first 30 minutes was probably the best half of football that this Georgia defense has ever played under Kirby Smart. And it didn't matter if Quinn Ewers was back there, Arch Manning was back there. You could have put Peyton Manning back there. I don't know that it would have made a difference with how well guys like Jalen Walker, Mykel Williams, and that entire Georgia front played on Saturday.
I love the fact they got ETN to be a big focal point. I know I was banging the drum on that last week in our conversation. Connor, ETN with 87 on the ground and 23 in the air and just moving the chains, three touchdowns, just huge. And just seems like the physicality you just talked about. And the other side of it was the defense. I mean, a healthy Mykel Williams is just a difference maker. Talk about the job the defense did. Walker, Everett, all those guys.
Yeah, Mykel Williams played, I think, 42 snaps since he got hurt in the Clemson game. And I think it's not a coincidence that he plays his most snaps of the season on Saturday. The two games where he's been healthiest, Texas and Clemson, have also been Georgia's two best games defensively to this point in time. So I think when you have him, when you're able to pair him opposite Jalen Walker, who was just absolutely phenomenal, and not just with the way that he got after it and it impacted this game on the stat sheet, but his leadership, his, you know, the way he goes out there and encourages his teammates. There's a video going around where Julian Humphrey had a late pass breakup, fourth down or third down there, and Humphrey's doing a little celebration, doing the seatbelt celebration, and Jalen Walker comes over and starts barking at him, telling him to knock it off. And it's stuff like that that is why this Georgia defense and why this Georgia team still has national championship potential, even with all some of the issues in the Georgia passing game right now and with how they've looked in recent weeks. If this defense is capable of summoning that type of performance in big games on the road, they've got a chance to win a national championship. It looked like with the way that Texas offense was playing, with the way they struggled to block up front, it looked like that game was being played on the road. That's how dominant the Georgia defensive front was.
Yeah, I thought Georgia overwhelmed them in the first half, and it shook them a little bit because of the physicality and what was going on. We're talking with our buddy Connor Riley from Dog Nation. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Tell me about this passing game. I mean, whether it was Delp or Lovett, or Lucky Lawson. I mean, all these guys, there was a variety of guys that caught balls. There was no one dominant receiver, although Lovett, I think, got 11 targets, but he only caught four of those balls.
The whole night was a mess. You know, when Dylan Bell, who I think is right. Georgia's best receiver, drops his first two pass attempts, so this is probably going to be a long night for this group. And yes, Carson Beck didn't have a great game, but I thought what Kirby Smart said in the post game, where he said it was almost comical, our ability to catch a football, that's about as harsh as he's ever been in sort of criticizing a position group at large. And they've just got to be better. And it's not like they weren't separating or weren't being out there and getting plays. They were open. Carson was throwing into open windows. And guys are just dropping passes left and right. And maybe it's a one-off. Maybe it's just one bad game where it seems like everyone sort of got a case of the dropsies. But if this is going to be something where it's going to continue, because I think the Georgia pass catchers for the most part this year have done some positive things. Arian Smith has shown big playability. Dylan Bell had the big play against Alabama. You know, Lawson Lucky's had a really encouraging season. They've all had really good individual moments. But I thought across the position group, both you want to include tight ends in there as well, that's about as poor of a game as you've seen from a position group at Georgia this season.
Is our man Connor Riley, guys, from Dog Nation, as Georgia now will have some time off, get ready for the cocktail party. One of the drawbacks, though, is the damn, you know, targeting rule. And I know that targeting is tough for the fans to understand. We want to see guys obviously not have neck and head neck injuries and see somebody, you know, get paralyzed. But it has got to be some kind of interpretation when a runner or a wide receiver lowers his head or he changes his center of gravity. They make you expect to be like the Matrix. You got to stop in midair and they'll change. So it's to me like the interpretation doesn't allow for interpretation. So what happens now? Are they ever going to address it? We'll get to the blown call in a second. But that drives me crazy.
I think like the Dan Jackson one. Like yes, it's tough because the Texas defender drops his head. But if you're a defender like Dan, you know you can't lower your head like that. That one I think is a little tough. Like the Janelle Aguero one. I don't know what you want these guys to do. That's one where I would like to see that one be rescinded and change moving forward. Because again, you know, Janelle just happens to be going lower than him because he's just naturally shorter of the ground. And these are things now where, you know, I get the ejection and you want to, you know, curtail some of this stuff so that it's not a repeat offenders and guys keep doing this. But to sit out the fourth quarter in what was a close game and now you're going to be shorthanded in the secondary in that first half against Florida, who's playing some of the best football of the season. You know, KJ Bolden's going to have to play a lot more now. Corey Thomas, who I thought came in and played well off the bench. You're going to be short-sacked, and that's going to have a real impact going into this game against Florida. But, you know, and I know, Mike, we're going to get to the pass interference call, non-call. I thought even if you remove that incredibly, like, historic gap, it was an incredibly poorly officiated game. There were a lot of questionable calls. There were some very, like, just dubious spots, replay reviews, overviews. I thought it was an incredibly poorly called game, and that's even before you factor in the throwing of things on the field and just the way that entire situation was handled.
All right, well, let's talk about it because that's the elephant in the room, Connor. Listen, Josh Brooks put out a statement late night Saturday. I read it Sunday morning when I got up and was doing the national show, and I thought it was brilliant the way he phrased it and talked about this moment. We know how Kirby felt about it. I feel like this is a solvable issue.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Replay, challenge flags, right. You can do the same thing we see in the National Football League. And maybe it takes a moment like this for college football to wake up and say, okay, you know what, this is the right way to go about it, because you felt cheated. Even though it didn't affect the outcome of the game, dog fans felt like, dude, if you – what's going on here?
You marked the ball for play and then had another confab. So somebody got in somebody's ear, Carl.
What do you think,
Connor? Not only did they mark the ball to play, like, time started running off the clock. There were 16 seconds left on the play clock. Like, Georgia, they've been going hurry up, could have snapped the ball there, and we could have been on our way. And then one lone fan throws a beer onto the field, and the Texas fans see this, and they all just start chucking it on there. And it's about a four-minute delay, and I guess after spotting the ball, after announcing the penalty, something I don't know that I've seen all that often, where they've started the process of the next play, they go in there and change it. And look, blown calls happen in college football all the time. It happens in every sport. It's unfortunate. It is a factor of the game. And, you know, like, if that pass interference, which I don't believe it was pass interference, I thought at best maybe it was holding, I would have been okay with a no call there. And obviously the interception stood. I just, the whole process, and you set up, as Kirby Smart pointed out, a terrible precedent. And I went back and I rewatched the game, and I was curious to hear what Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler were saying as it was going on. And Herbstreit said, you know, the most important thing is that they got it right. In this situation, the process was so messed up and such a bad example moving forward. I actually don't think that's the case. I think the process has to be right and has to be correct, because I guarantee you there's going to be a play in a big game this weekend. Let's say it's LSU at Texas A&M, where there's a call that the home crowd doesn't like.
Right.
They're now going to start doing this and seeing if they can get these officials where they are able to flash the play up on the board and say, oh, we got this wrong. That's the other thing. Pass interference plays aren't reviewable, but they showed the replay in stadium, and the refs just naturally have a wandering eye and go up there and look at it. And
they did.
This is something where there is an absolute home field advantage here. And, look, I know that they've got to defend the refs and they've got to defend the officials, and Greg Sankey has come out and reprimanded Texas in the way that the fans interacted there. Sankey also has to come down on these officials, because that's the biggest issue here. You know, the fan behavior, look, it sets up a bad example, but that all starts because of what happened with the officials there and the decision that they made. Once those things were thrown on the field, which, by the way, there was no delay of game called on Texas there either, or no penalty when it came to that. Once that started, everything that unfurled from there, I believe, falls at the feet of the officials.
And then, of course, the touchdown makes it an 8-point game at the time. So, obviously, huge momentum, although the call, of course, was inaccurate. Yet, give me some transparency. I want to know, give me the minute-by-minute. Where'd the call? Who said, did ref literally go, oh, wow, look at the big screen? We see that every week in the NFL. There's an injury timeout. You know, there's breaks in the action. These refs, they're not like deaf, dumb, and blind. They can look at the TV. This one was wacky. Hey, go ahead.
And there's no way for us to ask the officials afterwards. There's no press conference. There's no pool reporter to go and speak to these officials. There's absolutely no accountability when it comes to the officials here. And this is the number one thing that anyone is talking about coming out of this game between what was the number one team in the country and the number five team in the country. This could have been an SEC championship preview. This could even well have been a national championship preview. And the thing that we are talking about most coming out of this, as I think we have to, is this officiating blunder. And that's an absolute black eye on this game, on this league, on SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who was present in Austin for this game to see sort of all of this unfold.
Yeah, everybody was there. I totally agree with you. Well stated black eye for the game when we should be talking about what the kids did, well, these young men, and how the game ultimately played out. I agree with you, Connor. We got a roll. I know we didn't get into Florida, but we got plenty of time to do that. The only concern, I guess, is the mistakes of Carson Beck. They were
He's
able to
tighten that up. Man.
Yeah, they were able to overcome that, right? I mean, I said they won in spite of him. Let's be honest. The three picks, but the defense was so dominant. Are you concerned about that, before we let you go, in a big game once again where he showed he was vulnerable?
I'm going to be very interested in how he plays in this Florida game, because that game obviously means a lot to him being from Jacksonville. I think it's clear that he's pressing, he's trying to create, and he doesn't have the same skill talent that he had around him last year. I think this Florida game, while Georgia's obviously a better team, is massive for Carson Beck, at least to try and reset the narrative a little bit.
Great All stuff. Right, bro. Connor, tell the people where they can follow you and get your stuff, man.
Yep, you guys can follow us on me on Twitter, at KConOReilly. We've got a ton of stuff coming out still from this Georgia game. Kirby Smart got his 100th career win on Saturday. I've got some numbers behind that coming for a story tomorrow.
Great stuff.
Yeah, man, we didn't mention that in the top of the show. The fastest beating Nick Saban by a game to 100 wins in the SEC.
Yeah, they gave him the game ball for it. If you missed that footage inside,
I am truly elite
inside of the Georgia locker room. All right, man, we got more stuff to get to. Our buddy Joe Patrick is here. We're going to talk about what happened with our Falcons yesterday with Joe. He covers the team on a daily basis. We'll get his take on all of that. This hour brought to you again by Mark Spain Real Estate. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings. Perimeter.
Zorin.
It's Dukes and Bell. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings. Perimeter location. This has a downstairs, upstairs balcony, TVs everywhere. They're going to have the Monday night games on. But we got to jump into our football conversation with Joe Patrick. 5 o'clock, Falcon Report's coming up. We'll hear from Kirk Cousins, our quarterback, and also I think Hayden Ellis as well.
You don't like that.
No, I didn't. And Joe, I know, you know, you're up there every day at Flyer. We'll be back up there on Wednesday to talk with Coach and the players. Tough day yesterday at the office, man. And Mike and I were saying we're using the word flat because that's what it was, right? From start to finish, it was just they weren't engaged or flat. I'm trying to get the right phrasing because I will never question the effort of these guys. They give 100%, but the execution wasn't there. The mistakes, everything was not going our way.
Yeah, Raheem Morris called it flat, and you know I don't know if he's referring only to the effort. I think there's also just mental lapses that some of the players were having and some of the just kind of, you know, Kirk Cousins by the end of it. The team was still in the game and he was just trying to do too much and those turnovers then happen and then it kind of, you know, snowballs on you at the end of the game. But that's what's frustrating to me as someone who's just watching the game. You know, it was a 3-point game in the middle to latter portion of the third quarter. I mean, like, this team was in the game and then they just kind of gave it away. Now, having said that, it didn't really ever feel like they were on the cusp of actually kind of pushing over the top of Seattle, just when you saw how they mismanaged the game, especially at the end of that first half.
Oh, that was a backbreaker. Carl shut it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I asked Jesse Bates about it in the locker room, saying that he basically confirmed that when you give up a play like that, it kind of changes the whole tenor of the halftime conversations, how you're going to adjust going into the second half. It really felt like they were truly behind the eight ball after that big mistake late in the first half.
It is Smoke and Joe Patrick with us here on Dukes of Bell. Look, we got to get pass rush. And the thing is, Judon is here. But, you know, and he gets held. It reminded me so much of the old days of the Predator when John Abraham would be out on one side, Carl, and this guy's on chicken wings and they're wrestling him. And they were going after, like, what, the false starts, but they missed the holding on Sunday. It is what it is. How do we get some help? Because, I mean, everybody goes, oh, call the Raiders. Well, first off, they might not want to trade their best player.
Yeah.
And what do we do? We're an old team. Technically, we got a 2-year window with Cousins. We got to do something. What are we going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know Terry Fontenot is always working the phones, trying to, you know, figure out something. I've always held out a skepticism that, you know, one of these kind of superstar edge players was going to come into this team. It just doesn't feel like they have, frankly, the ammo to go out and get one of those guys, especially when you think about the fact that they're already missing two picks from this draft that's coming up. They're not cute and they're not great picks.
Fifth rounder we lost on the nonsense over tampering.
Right, and then the third rounder they traded already to add to that exact position where you're hoping to get an upgrade on. So, you know, at some point you just need the guys who are on the roster to perform. And honestly, guys, I think a lot of this, maybe not a lot of it could be fixed, but I think you could be helped by just getting some different guys in the rotation. When I've seen guys like Zach Harrison play, I think he's been really good. Ruka Roro has been good, maybe not necessarily in the pass rush, but I think he's been an effective player on that interior defensive line. So I think if you're just able to get some of these, especially the younger players, in the mix a little bit more, maybe you find some guys who can have that kind of breakout, that kind of leap in their second or first year.
The positives from yesterday, as we talked with Joe Patrick about the Falcons, more Falcons coming up at 5 o'clock, more dogs as well at 5:20 as part of our strong arm story of the day. Joe Patrick, the positives is Bijan gets 100 yards. I said, and this is the way I feel, you tell me what you think, he's really feeling comfortable in this offense.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the results and residuals of that with the production of what he's giving us. And it's not just last, you know, yesterday. The last few weeks have kind of felt that way with Bijan, even though Mike and I were curious. We thought he was a little banged up, I think, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he still came out and played really well.
Had maybe one of his most impressive performances this season yesterday, not necessarily statistically, although he was very good statistically, running for 103 yards, catching for another 40, receiving for another 40 yards. But it was the way he was running, you know, the contact balance, seeing him spin off of defenders, you know, making guys miss with some hesitation, that shiftiness inside. Where he was able to elude some defenders and pick up some big yards. That's the kind of Bijan Robinson where I feel like we haven't seen as much. We saw that a lot last year. It really got us kind of going, got our juices flowing as football fans, but we hadn't really seen that super dynamic version of Bijan Robinson so far this season. We saw it yesterday, and hopefully that portends for good things to come for this ground attack, because that's really been, you know, the thing that's been missing from this offense. It came back into play against Carolina, but, you know, Carolina has one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. Yep. I thought it was actually good to see them kind of continue that success against the Seattle team yesterday.
It's our man, Smoking Joe Patrick. Guys, we're live at Buffalo Wild Wing. Another trivia question coming up, Carl. We're a chance to win a $50 gift card.
Yeah.
For Buffalo Wild Wings, as we're live at the perimeter location. The offensive line, we've talked about the job that Fontenot's done and really beefing up the depth.
Yeah.
We like Storm Norton. We like the other guys. But Kyle Hinton struggled.
That was tough.
And Bergeron, but do we know what's going on? Because the neck seems like a scary injury to have, and are we going to lose him for a few weeks now?
Yeah, I don't know an update. I know Raheem Morris is speaking to media today, so it'll be interesting to see if they have an update at that point. But when he talks about him being out for the game with a neck, that should be sending, you know, alarm bells in your head, because that is not an injury that is easy to, like, just play through. You can't play through something that's that serious. And if he was out for the game with a neck injury, I hope he's not going to be out for a long time. But, you know, that's the kind of thing, and I don't want to put this suggest that this is the case, but, you know, a neck injury could end a career. Like a knee injury you can work through. Even the worst knee injury you can get over in a year, year and a half, something like that. A neck injury has potential to be catastrophic for a player. So let's just hope that it's not anything along those lines.
And not to mention with Hinton in there, Carl, the way the Bucs took away the run game last time we played.
Big time.
On the road, now we go on Sunday.
Big time.
And to keep going on the offensive line depth, you know, I think Storm Norton is a great example of a guy who comes in and he gives you what you need at that tackle spot and his ability to protect the passer. That's really his strength. Kyle Hinton, he is a mauler. He can help you kind of in maybe an Arthur Smith-style ground game, but I don't know. In this Falcons offense, I think I was just reading earlier today, has the fifth highest neutral pass rate, which basically means how often they're passing on first and second downs. It's an offense that wants to pass the ball a lot more. Right. They have a quarterback who can do that, and Kyle Hinton's just, you know, not going to be as conducive to making that happen.
Joe, update here for our listeners. As Mike was just asking the question, Raheem Morris just said, I think everybody's going to be okay when asked about Falcons injuries. Bergeron, and James Smith-Williams, who also left the game, sustained injuries yesterday, but only Bergeron did not return. So Ross saying he thinks everybody's going to be okay.
That would rule out some sort of, some sort of fracture or something in the neck there.
Just keep an eye on Thursday's report for who's not practicing.
Agreed.
That might be an indicator.
All right, real quick before we let you go, and Joe's out here hanging out with us, come meet your favorite personalities, man. Mike Johnson's out here, Bo Morgan.
I'm the meat man.
Dylon, Abe's out here hanging out with us.
I see
dumb man Day Day is over here. So come through. We'd love to see you guys. We got to shake this off. I feel like we win this game on Sunday. I'm not jumping ahead. We win this division because I don't see Carolina doing jack, and the Saints are a mess right now. This is a big spot for us.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we got a bunch of games left in the NFC, I get that. But if we are able to sweep the Bucs on Sunday, that puts us in the driver's seat, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe the silver lining of this Seahawks game is that it is a bit of a wake-up call before this massively important game like you just outlined there. Because if they win this game, I mean, it really is turning into a two-horse race in the NFC South with the way that everything has kind of gone off the rails for the Saints here after we thought that they were kind of going to be in that competition. So you're totally right. This is an opportunity for them to really take this thing, you know, by the stranglehold. And hopefully, you know, what they went through on Sunday, they can actually learn some lessons for it. And who knows? You know, teams can come out of that kind of moment and be a better team on the other side of it. I think that's what we'll be looking out for with this team.
Good stuff. Joe Patrick, always a pleasure. We'll see you on Wednesday up there at Flowery Branch.
And hey, while we got you, just I know we got to go to break, just real quick, Atlanta United, there was a 10% chance, and you cover them as well, of making the playoffs. Now we have a chance to go play Miami. You got to beat Montreal, though, tomorrow.
That's right. I was over there at their training ground this morning. There's definitely a good feeling amongst the team. We talked to Brad Guzan. He said, feel like a little bit of freedom. Now that the baggage of the regular season's in the past, everybody's on the same level. Everybody's in that kind of win-or-go-home situation, so that's what they're looking forward
to. Yeah, Mike Conti's going to join us tomorrow on the show. He's headed up to Montreal and, of course, the voice of Atlanta United to give us the latest on this matchup tomorrow. Joe Patrick, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Mike Bell, we're live at Buffalo Wild Wings. We've got $50 gift cards we're going to be giving away. Stay tuned for that. But, Mike, we got to get to some guy talk on this Monday.
Coming up next, guys, what NBA player had a much better Sunday night than all of us combined? And what star quarterback eats boogers next? Where the play is play. Look at this crowd on a Monday. We are at the unbelievable location, guys, Buffalo Wild Wings Perimeter Mall.
Yay, yay.
Yeah, baby, just off Dunwoody. And what a scene up here, man. We got people at the bar. We got some great listeners.
It's great.
Like Joe Patrick, he's walking around with his shirt off. What the hell's going on over here?
I don't know. He left us, and all of a sudden he said, you ladies ready for this?
He just signed a woman's chest. All hell's breaking loose. So come on down and join us, guys. Buffalo Wild Wing just gave away a $50 gift card. The question was, what Dodger in the 70s was known as the Penguin?
Oh, good call. Love the show, by the way.
Me too. That show is I still
can't. So good.
Every time I watch it, I still can't believe that's Colin Farrell. But the Penguin was Ron Say back in the old days.
He's a great player.
And that brings us to the TV. Of course, it all starts now, guys. Dodgers and Yankees. Sure, the networks are happy about it. The numbers, interestingly enough, Carl, some of the most watched World Series in modern history, Yankees-Dodgers. As a matter of fact, the last time World Series viewership eclipsed 40 million people. That's like Super Bowl-like numbers.
That's
when TV went from, like, Channel 13 to cable. 1981, the year that the Dodgers finally beat the Yankees. And that was 41 million people tuned in to watch that World Series. The 78 World Series, the year the Yankees came back from 14 games back after the Red Sox, Bucky Dent. 44 million people watched that World Series. To give you some present context, 9 million people tuned into the World Series last year for the Rangers and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, it's a different landscape. And you talk about like 78, 81.
Right. And just 11 million people for the Astros and Phillies 2 years ago.
It's all that was on. But, Mike, you're talking about 30 million less than what those numbers you're talking about?
Basically in a generation of people.
So it's just a different landscape. I think the numbers will be big. Again, here's the thing that you have to add, and they will. Streaming. You got to see how their streaming looks. There are a lot of young folks who are watching this, Mike, on streaming. They are watching it, but they're not watching it on traditional TV. So I'm curious to see what it looks like. But I'm glad because I think the two biggest stars in Judge and Ohtani are playing in this series.
So I got to be honest. The Mets-Dodgers series was one of the strangest ones I've ever seen. To see a series go six games, but every game is a whooping?
Yep.
Crazy. Just bizarre. All right, man. Moving on to the guy having the greatest weekend, better than all of us. That would be
who?
All-star Olympian. Tyrese Halliburton.
Why? How?
Hanging out in Vegas. Maybe you hadn't seen the video. He goes out last night in Las Vegas. He sees 50 Cent, who's in residency out there right now.
50.
And then he decides to congratulate 50 on a great show. Take a listen.
Fifth, what's up, brother? Wanted to congratulate you on your Vegas residency. You've always shown love, so I want to show love back. Appreciate you. Congratulations. That's a big, big honor. It's 4 a.m. I just got back from the club. But I got to make sure I show love to my guy. Congratulations, brother. Keep going.
So you hear the girls in the background because you're just saying, like, what's the deal, right?
Yeah, what's the big deal, Mike?
Well, Tyrese Halliburton, since we're on radio, and I'll give you the visual, he's got no shirt on, and he's got three blondes with him in his hotel room, presumably, at 4 a.m. And
they're friends, Mike. They're just friends.
He's got three blondes, and they look like one looks like kind of cougarish, one looks like sort of 20 something, another looks kind of 20 something.
Yeah.
And in the words of Robert Townsend, he's about to do the nasty.
Wow. So,
and I like doing the nasty.
So that's the message he sent with the chicks in the background.
He's literally going, 50, I just get back in the club. Yeah. I'm going to have some incredible sex with these three women next. I didn't you left that part out. But everyone's kind of just imagining that's what's going to happen next.
Well,
the magic's about to happen.
Well, and no wonder those women were cheering in the background. Yes. There's an obvious reason they were excited.
Imagine, by the way, what is Therese Halliburton's suite look like in Vegas, too, by the way?
Oh, you know? That's nuts. Yeah.
I'm going to make love to you on that bed. I'm going to make love to you in the other wing, and then then later we can all get together. Anyway, good for you, Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, well, listen, he's an Olympic gold medalist, although he didn't do a damn thing. What are you going to say?
He was happy to take the participation medal. He owned it down there in Paris Olympics. All right, we all know that Aaron Rodgers is a real knucklehead. I mean, self-professed genius, believes his own BS. Did you know Aaron Rodgers eats his own boogers?
Come on. No way.
Yes, he did.
No.
NBC cameras caught it in the waning minutes of the Jets' defeat in Pittsburgh as the Steelers were running up the score. Take a look, Carl. Yes. Take a look.
I don't want to look.
There he is, digging for gold.
Oh.
And Just like in Caddyshack. $50 as the smells kid eats it.
Oh, come on.
And then Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe he just had to dispose of it,
here
Mike.
He is. There he is. He's picking his nose.
Oh, Mike, come on,
and there he is,
Mike.
Eating his own boogers.
I can't look at that.
Aaron Rodgers eats boogers. Our bartender saw it. She saw the video. It's out there.
I can't view that anymore.
Now, there are some people out there, holistic believing wackadoodles, who do say that you can help your immune system by consuming your own stuff in your nostrils.
No, thank you. I'm good.
Because there would be a little bit of particulate, perhaps something that almost like a flu shot.
Do you have to go into the particulars of this?
Well, I'm just letting you know what's going on with Aaron Rodgers' nose.
That's disgusting.
And the finger in the aforementioned nose.
That's nasty.
That is nasty.
I know.
I did not see that because I, at that point, was asleep.
Aaron Rodgers eats boogers. And by the way, this is the kind of hard-hitting journalism. Journalism?
Yeah.
I'd love to see in the AJC. I had to get it from, of course, the New York Post. All right, man. Mr. Unlimited Russell Wilson finally gets the start for the Steelers. And dare I say, George Pickens is one happy camper. They had a big pass interference. They got him the ball. There were some big moments.
He finally scored.
The vertical passing game, which with all due respect to Justin Fields, it's been missing, was in full front of the nation to see. That looks like a really good football team that now has everything.
Well, here's
you ever done anything dangerous?
No, I have not. This is what we say about some players, right? And I'm not totally convinced. I got to see Russ be consistent, but he looked good. There was a lot of buildup to this.
Right.
And he knew if he screwed this up, he probably was going to be done. But here's the other side of this. This is what we talk about when we say sometimes players just have to make plays. Some of that stuff wasn't there. Russ threw it anyway.
Right.
And I think the hesitation of Justin at points in this season where I don't want to take a chance to turn it over, he didn't want to throw it in there. Russ was like, I'm going to throw it in there. So, you know, listen, he did win a Super Bowl. We don't take away what his resume says. He's been a winning quarterback for over a decade, Mike. He was a winning quarterback. Can he do this in Pittsburgh? We'll see.
Right. And as we know, ever since Russell Wilson left Seattle and all the news came out, then Denver, that maybe he's less than genuine.
You know I can't get that image out of my mind.
Everything is kind of for effect, and Russell Wilson doesn't really say anything without some sort of motivation behind it. Well, here he is talking after the game. I think there's a lot of outside noise that makes it seem like a negative thing about this rivalry being internal. You know, we just want to win. And I got to give it to Justin Fields. Give him credit, man. Just all the things he was able to do. How great he's been playing. He inspires me every day, and vice versa. We have a great relationship.
Corny. Yeah, so, no, I don't buy that at all.
On face value, it's the right thing to say, but coming out of Russell Wilson's mouth, a lot of people are going, eh.
Yeah, I don't buy it. But you know what? He's been saying all those things as he probably knew that he was going to get this opportunity. I did not think he was going to get this opportunity. I'm telling you. And I think, and you said this, I think internally someone wanted to stay with Justin, but yet was told he needed to go with Russell.
That man's name was Arthur Smith.
Correct.
And now you got the same thing we were looking for when he was here. When our offense, where's the offense? Where's the vertical passing?
Yes.
Hey, man, one last nugget for fantasy owners. Bad news, 49er fans. Brandon Ayuk done for the season.
Mm.
That word just came out.
Brutal.
Knee injury. Also found out, of course, Deshaun Watson Achilles done for the season. Now a lot of folks say done in Cleveland, perhaps. Maybe they finally pull the ripcord on that and just eat the contract. We'll see where that goes. Anyway, Guy Talk brought to you by Dukes and Bale. Hey, man, Ale.
All right, guys. Talking about our Falcons, you'll hear from Kirk Cousins, our quarterback, Caden Ellis, talking about what went down yesterday.
Are you
also
digging for gold?
That's disgusting. Also, I remember in third grade, we had a kid that used to do that.
What was the kid's name?
I'm not going to reveal it.
Everybody had the kid who ate the boogers in school.
Oh, third grade was the worst. And they'd be like, is he doing it again?
We had this kid, Rob. Oh. It would be like a snail trail going up the sleeve.
Okay, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. Hey, strong arm story of the day, Georgia rules the weekend. And the controversial call that everybody's talking about. This hour, again, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. It's Dukes and Bell live at Buffalo Wild Wings.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.